States, after all, which generations of earlier New Yorkers, men, women, and children, walked around as they moved through the cities they knew. Cities filled with Model T Fords and elevated trains, electric streetcars, and horse-drawn trolleys. Join us as we embark on a journey through time, peeling back the layers of history to uncover the cities that lie just beneath the one we know. Over the next 22 minutes, we will bring those earlier cities back to life and see some of the ways New York has grown and changed through a series of unfolding glimpses, not landscapes, but timescapes, that will take us back, step by step, all the way into the city's past, back to a time before it was a city at all. It began with the rolling lands around the harbor, home for thousands of years to a native people called the Lenape, who lived off the fish and oysters that filled its rivers. The names they gave to their settlements and to the long, slender island at the center of their world would remain in use long after they themselves had vanished or been displaced.
This island is the key and principal stronghold of the country.
The same land and water would have very different meaning for the newcomers now arriving from across the sea. In early September 1609, Henry Hudson, an English explorer working for the Dutch, sailed into a well-protected bay just off the Atlantic, pushed north into a narrow passage, and was amazed to come upon a second bay, whose calm, sparkling waters were perfectly sheltered from the open sea, just a few miles away. It was perhaps the greatest natural harbor in the world, as well as the gateway to a majestic river, later named for Hudson himself, reaching hundreds of miles into the continent, the main entrance to North America. It was on the slender island at the head of the bay that Hudson's employers, the Dutch, chose to plant their headquarters in the New World. Carrying out the most famous real estate deal in history, they purchased Manhattan from the natives for the value of 60 guilders, the legendary $24, then built a bustling port city called New Amsterdam, complete with a fort and gun battery, a canal to transport goods, and a wooden dock to handle the growing trade in furs, rum, sugar, and African slaves. Surrounded on three sides by water, and on the fourth by a high wall to protect from attack, the dense, compact colony provided a prophetic template for the modern city, closely packed buildings facing busy streets. Eager to expand their foothold, the Dutch planted settlements all around the harbor, including the village of Brooklyn across the river, the suburb of Harlem to the north, and on the lands beyond that, the estate of Jonas Bronck and his family, the Broncks. But within 40 years, the Dutch were gone, pushed out by the English, who by then had settled the rest of the American coastline. In August 1664, without firing a shot, the British took over New Amsterdam and gave it a new name, New York, in honor of the king's younger brother, the Duke of York. Over the coming century, the English would expand the network of settlements first laid down by the Dutch, but like the Dutch before them, the English presence was about to recede into history, this time due to the colonists themselves. With the coming of the American Revolution, the entire region would be invaded and occupied, and the city itself all but destroyed in two devastating fires. And when the war was finally over, New York would have to begin again.
This still new city is the queen of commerce and the sovereign of the seas.
Emerging from the ruins of the Revolution, the little town at the foot of Manhattan would soon stun its American rivals, reaching out in every direction to become the most innovative and dynamic port on Earth. Down on South Street, New York merchants refused to follow tradition and let their vessels sit in port until they were filled with goods. Instead, they sailed them every week, filled or not, a radical new idea called a regular schedule. Next, they linked their busy transatlantic lines to steamboats running up and down the coast. Soon it was cheaper for southern ports to ship their cotton through New York and to send it across the ocean themselves. Looking to expand, the merchants turned a few blocks inland to Wall Street, where they helped create the first financial markets and investment houses. And they encouraged the city's ship designers just up the river to come up with ever faster hulls, until New York's packets and clippers were known as the fastest vessels on the sea. The merchants soon made New York the biggest port in America, bigger than all others combined, a place whose booming trade now drove its expansion northward. To keep up with the growth, a new grid of streets was added every few years to the existing city, usually with no regard for what came before. Finally, in 1811, a visionary mayor named DeWitt Clinton proposed a stunning plan for New York's future. A vast street grid covering the open lands of Manhattan Island with 2,000 city blocks, enough to house a million people, or 10 times the existing population. Gazing out on Manhattan's miles of open farms and fields, the plan seemed impossibly ambitious. To make it a reality, Clinton would need to look far beyond the city's borders, to the wilderness of the American continent, where high mountains blocked every port on the Atlantic from the fertile lands of the Midwest. Clinton's answer was an artificial waterway, a canal, hacked 363 miles through the forest and mountains of upstate New York. The Erie Canal transformed the geography of America overnight, capturing the immense output of the nation's heartland and funneling it through New York Harbor. Adding its new river to the Midwest, to its booming coastal trade with the South, and its swift packet service to England, the city had made itself the crucial link between Europe and the American continent, and the commercial center of America itself.
All Europe is coming across the ocean. All that part of youths who cannot make a living at home. And what shall we do with them?
Intended to perfect the merchant city, the canal soon transformed it into something else, an industrial city. A place not only to trade things, but to manufacture and distribute them. By the late 1840s, New York was on its way to becoming the biggest industrial center in the country, as a belt of factories and workshops rose across Manhattan and the Brooklyn shoreline. To man them all, the city began drawing in tens of thousands of workers, men, women, and children from across America, and increasingly from Europe, German and Irish immigrants fleeing persecution, poverty, and famine at home. Pouring into the piers of South Street, the newcomers quickly filled the noisy shop floors and crowded into the filthy streets and overflowing tenements of the city's first slums. Middle-class New Yorkers, horrified by the rising tide of immigrants and factory workers, began fleeing to row house districts uptown or across the river to Brooklyn Heights, the world's first suburbs. From here, they became the world's first commuter.